interrupting in Neo-Ukronial. You know, those are still going on, and they're coming back. I was telling you, endless diseases. Neo-Ukronial, climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded. You hearing what's going on? Nuclear glowing, postulated cricketism, to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 535. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. And the best way you can do that, usually against the government, is you go to find their duties and obligations and you find out whether or not they did it. And that's how we went through COVID swindle. And I was up on that. That hasn't changed. It's not going to change. The things that's going to change is how they come at us. And you still have to keep going back to that original basis. They're going to be changing all that, trying to change that underneath the skin. I told you they were already moving on the rules. If you went through the rules for communicable disease law, you were seeing little inserts promulgated to allow and accept experts from foreign experts like the United States government. Remember, the United States government itself is foreign to your state, but the state has the reserved power to do your health. And that's where the whole thing rolled down to. So, important to keep your health. And they're not interested in keeping your health, so you have to do it. That's what I'm saying about being free is not a spectator sport. Trying to get free can cause you a little bit of trouble, though. And here we have a rescued Australian sailor reveals motivation to survive. We have Timothy Shattuck was rescued after surviving several arduous months in the ocean on just rainwater and raw fish. The seaman was picked up by a helicopter pilot that happened to notice the boat, which later was approached by a fishing trawler. He ends up being out there around 3 months or so. The adventurer whose boat was damaged in the storm somewhere in the Pacific Ocean a few weeks after he set sail believes that the moral duty to save his dog, Bella, gave him motivation to survive. Isn't that nice? That's cool, huh? Yeah. Well, he eventually lets Bella stay home. And he goes to Australia and he gives his dog to someone else. Pretty interesting. So, best to both of them, but where the dog saves a man here as he was working to help his dog. Penguins cannot save themselves, but this is likely due to what are we talking about usually here behind the woodshed? The naturally occurring cycles. And we'll see in this story that they always bring up the taint and climate change, but it's really just about cycles. When you look far enough back, and you start seeing that they do exist. Anybody who says who will come up and say that this is the highest sense really isn't telling you the truth, because we don't know what sense is. This place has been around for this earth has been around for quite a while, and there was people that weren't paying attention to make records until just recently, and so there was all kinds of things going on. A very wide variance in temperatures. Thousands of penguins found dead. They couldn't save themselves, folks. The deaths of, in the ocean all this time, the deaths of 2,000 young Magellanic penguins have been blamed on overfishing and bad weather. And that we should just end the story there. Sorry to hear that they die, but they do die, and they die all the time. Life is tough. Let's get down to the bottom of this story here. Hundreds of little blue penguins washed up in New Zealand last year with the mass die-off attributed to starvation, as the fish they typically eat had moved to deeper waters due to warming temperatures. While some blamed this on climate change, others countered that it was part of a naturally occurring cycle. And what have I been bringing up here in anticipation? The El Nino, the effect. The La Nina is the opposite. And those warmer waters heat up and those fish go, and then there's nothing for the penguins to eat. And so they starve. And that's a couple of reasons that goes on. And like I said, life is tough, and they exist in the ocean, and not quite as well as that dog and that man, but there we have it go look at all this, a cycle, naturally occurring cycles, and then we find out that none of those things are in their models, those models that the climate alarmists will talk about. And be careful of who they have talking anymore. I mean, these folks are, they'll be talking about being some oceanographer, and they're really not. They're going to give you a bunch of wrong information. We've got to keep on our toes. But I guess what we won't be eating is penguin, even though they died and we maybe have collected them up. I guess some people seen them in the water. They might have collected them up to process them. But the U.S. approves lab-grown chicken nonetheless. We're not going to eat penguin for sure. Two California-based companies will sell what they call cell-cultivated poultry at pricey restaurants. And if you read the story, they have to go there because they have to sell people a lot. It costs a lot of money to make cultured chicken because it's chemicals. It's biology. It's in the lab. We're supposed to agree with this stuff. It's supposed to be green. It isn't. But anyway, that's the story. Upside to COO Amy Chen said, who acknowledged the ick factor inherent in the idea of lab-grown meat, told the AP that most people who try her company's product come around to the idea, claiming, quote, "The most common response we get is, oh, it tastes like chicken." And okay, that's what you want to do, but it's really pricey. They can't keep it. They can't. The price of your meat is going to match that, is going to probably quadruple, even higher than it is. What we thought got high, it's going to probably quadruple to get there so they can make that just as cheap as regular meat. And remember, look inside how they make that stuff. It's concentrated proteins of sorts. Not much different in a way, different processing, different protein. But as those spike proteins that they put together for you, the venoms, and people have a real hard time with this stuff. So that cultured protein tastes like any other unknown flesh in the world. Tastes just like chicken, folks. Good thing that that's probably why they started that, right? Let's start with the chicken, because it tastes like that. It doesn't matter what protein we eat. It tastes like chicken when we don't identify it. Another thing of being chicken, the cops having auditors get a little too close. And there has been a law in Arizona that popped up to limit the distance you can stay away from a cop when they're doing an arrest. Here we have the outcome of that. They passed it, but then it was challenged in the courts. Again, you can't sit around when they do this. And Arizona's controversial police recording law ruled unconstitutional. So those, if the cops are chicken having you near the camera, they're not going to have to be able to say much. But I'm not going to tell you to get up by a cop. That's not going to be something smart. Well, nothing's really smart anyway, S-M-A-R-T. Be more intelligent. Give them space, whatever it is. Just get your shots. You don't need to be in their hip pocket to do that. But at any rate, it doesn't matter relative to law. You can't make a law to limit it. A federal judge ruled Friday that Arizona's law limiting how close people can get to recording law enforcement is unconstitutional. In this three-page ruling, John J. Tucci said that the law violated the First Amendment, and, quote, "there is a clearly established right to record law enforcement officers engaged in the exercise of their official duties in public places." Now, you can read the rest of this story again. I don't have too much time to really bore down into it. It's the fact that the government tried to stop you, and then it got tested, and a judge says it does violate the First Amendment. Again, I'm going to caution all you auditors, anybody who's doing this, shoot, take your camera, take the shots. But like, don't get in between a cop and where he's going to shoot. Don't get it behind him when he's, don't scare them, don't scare her. Give them their space. But there can't be a law that defines what that space is. And I suspect also that they'll probably, the attorneys for the cops will come up with something that will go around that anyway, like obstruction of administration of justice or something like that. So be real careful. Don't use this as a license to get, like I said, sit on their shoulder. That ain't going to happen. So give them their space, even though, as we find, they're maybe, well, not all the time. Sometimes they're not real good about it, but you don't want to get in the way of that either. Word to the wise. I don't know what more to say about all that. But now that Arizona allows cameras up close and personal, if you want to see how this kind of works, and I wondered about this case, though it's correct. I talked with people about this, having this law come in and putting that distance away, and I said, well, they haven't figured out how close that distance is, but I'm not sure how the courts would treat it. If it's a reasonable distance, maybe, but I may have been in error there because the court says no. So we have to look very carefully. I guess be careful. You guys that are and gals that are out there doing this stuff, be real careful. Now that Arizona allows the cameras up close and personal, if you will, on this, nothing stops them from getting up and close and personal, keeping an eye on you either. Remember, it's a dual-edged sword. And this next story shows us about that. And coming on to quick into the world, people are flocking to this. I'm disappointed in mankind on this, but they want you up close and personal in their cameras. Eyeball scanning global ID system WorldCoin launches. Dystopian technology is rolling out globally, but is facing regulatory scrutiny in the U.S. I sure hope so. This is kind of creepy, but see, they're getting you to go to a third party, so there's really no real protection in a way. The government would be getting a protection. It's like a consumer thing. So be careful on how they move this thing through on us. But if I say us, just generally, but there's going to be some of us that will not even consider this. But I'm already watching pictures. At least they're telling us people are standing in line to put their iris in the machine to get it recorded. Skeptics are watching about OpenAI CEO Sam Altman's venture WorldCoin announces its launch. Let me go back to AI. It's not what you think it is, and it's error-prone. Besides, the point is you're getting a database. And I don't know if some of you know about iridology. Some of you don't, maybe. Iridology is kind of an interesting science. It's like a lot of these things, you have to have a lot of experience in it. They can tell you all about your body, all the health of your body. One more way to get at you and keep track of that. But there, you're going to get an iris, a biometric, to get your WorldCoin. Sam Altman's trying to go global with this thing, and people are loving it. I can't get it, but that's what's going on. This Monday, the Berlin and San Francisco-based Tools for Humanity, Tools for the Animals, unveiled WorldCoin blockchain-based digital passport system, the World ID, together with its own cryptocurrency token. And this is one more removed tokenization, token citizenship. You'll be that global citizen they want to make everybody. The WLD is what it'll be identified. I find these interesting, these little letter designations are like a lot like looking like the stock market stuff. I'm not interested in. But with the promise of cryptographically secured and proof of personhood, for all you guys and gals that know about person, this is not even you now. This is an inert straw man that they put in your place. This proof of personhood. Not a proof of man or woman, proof of legal entity for a particular subject matter. WorldCoin seeks to distinguish real people from AI bots, setting the foundation for potential universal basic income distribution. It does so by introducing its unique hardware, the Orb, a silver orb roughly the size of a bowling ball that performs iris scans to confirm the user's humanity. This is what they're telling you. Your animal nature, I suppose. Anyway, enough there. You can read on it. It's breaking on us now, folks. There's a really big stuff going on. Pretty scary in a way. If you don't agree with it, I don't think it's scary. I mean, if you fully just stay away from it, it's not scary. It can't get you. But it comes to the point when they start forcing it on you, like when we hear about the Fed now. That's the wholesale side of the financial interest. But when they move that into your token citizenship, and they start to move the commerce into that automation, you're going to be hard-pressed to do much as it works on out. That's why, again, it's parallel economy. Do your stuff local, buy local, use cash. Stay away from all this digital stuff because here we have, again, the Senate bill crafted the DEA targets end-to-end encryption requires online companies to report drug activity. That would be just the start. Again, they always come in on something that it's trying to stop. It's a good thing, given that you think that drug activity is bad. But the government gets to do it. They don't want you to be anonymous at all. So this back to your WorldCoin. They get your iris. They start getting all the information that you need. It goes global. And all these law enforcement agencies have it global. All these eyeballs are on your stuff. The eyeballs have it here. And you are going to be on the out. But they want the Senate bill wants to end the encryption that you enjoy to be, well, secure and then anonymous a bit. And so, I don't know what most people think about this. It seems like when I see the pictures of people standing in line, long, long lines, in the dark, no less, to go get their iris scan, I don't know what I am. I sit here trying to think, what am I? It's inert to me, but it's happening, and that means there's going to be gobs of people that are of that mentality, that think it's the bee's knees of life, and they aren't realizing what's coming down on them. I talk plenty about it. What else do I say? You, in a way, you know it or you don't. Those that don't know it, they may not be interested enough to keep searching it out. Then there's a next level. I think there's a next level where I explain to you what this tokenization is. It's not even what you think it is. It's not even virtual. It's not the electron. It's an obligation. It's an obligation that they have control over your life through. And the obligation is not yours. It's on your actions relative to the interpretation of someone else's obligation. And so now I think that's next level understanding about what they're really doing to us. And you really, that's way beyond what most people would even conceive. And your life is controlled on what they think you're doing expresses that obligation in them. And if they don't like it, they shut you off. So, and to keep you insecure, they take away the encryption because the government doesn't want competition. They want to be able to find you wherever you are. And if you don't think these devices have the ability, another story, FBI used Nintendo Switch to locate abducted child. Again, it's great that they found an abducted child. They don't tell you that the government is the one doing the abductions, but notwithstanding that, as I've told you, look inward, abducted child found because she signed into her console through the Switch game, and they had been given knowledge that she was online by someone online that knew of her, knew that she had gotten online, and then told somebody local, and those local cops, I think, called the FBI, and then they called Nintendo, and they were able to go through and track down where she was and got the guy who took her away from her home. She's a 14 or so-year-old girl picked up by some maybe 28-year-old guy, and anyway. You can read the story. Interesting technology. The point is, for me, is it's trackable. They can find you. And they can find you, and then they can cut you off. And they can track you down. And they can make up stories. Everyone's saying, oh, I don't do anything. You know, you don't know you don't do anything. You could be misidentified. AI identifies you in error. They look at 4,000 substances, other people, and they distill you down to 12 or 20 or so possibilities, and the cops come knocking on your door, didn't qualify whether any of that was any good, or whether even the last three that looked good were one of them might be still a poison. Remember, I've gone through that. This is the technology, the weakness in the technology that they're utilizing. You just can't stay anywhere near it. I don't even know what to say. I wish I could, because I come from a technology background. It's really neat. I couldn't wait for it. I mean, all the stuff we're seeing today, I just couldn't wait for it. Flying cars? Yeah. We just didn't have the technology back then. Battery car? Yeah, all that's cool. But they all limited. They all have a thing. And then they come along and they give you all this computer software stuff that you never own, and they throw it in and it's all surveillance nonsense for the future they wanted. And so it rolls out pretty straight. I don't know why it's a big question. I don't know why everyone's still looking at COVID swindle 3 years later. It seems to be like old news rehashed. The stuff with going through the government. It's what I was been researching for a decade. Where have people been tolerant of it up until the last 5 or 10 years? I don't know. Where were people? We were all deluded into believing that things were okay. Even after 9/11. Because nobody, hardly anybody, I tried to fight it, not real easy to fight it, especially when you don't know what you're doing, and we all have to go through that lesson part. Again, the Patriot Act, you had to go to bank account and all this other nonsense they threw on you, I just pulled out of the bank account. There was nothing, they needed to know you. That's the other point. Know your customer, because every one of you is a terrorist. And no one spoke up. And so they've got it. They got it down to where they got the world ID coming. People are now, privateers are making big money on stealing your identity. So they can track you down. Even a game now, they can track you down. And good for the girl. I have no, that is a good use to me. I don't know why they promote that, because that is the good use. They're going to stop a crime, a real good one. And so we say, okay, well, that's their no, that the camel's nose in that tent, and you're not going to get them back out. But they don't trust you. No encryption for you. But U.S. government launches the new cyber trust mark, its long-awaited IoT security labeling program. Well, they lied to us right there, because we know it's the battlefield Internet of Things, don't we? And that's what it's all about. So they don't trust you with encryption, but they'll give you a label like your USD. A organic label, right? And it isn't. 5% of it's no good. Remember, 95% pure, not 5. 5 is sitting there. Could be all the poisons in the world sitting that last 5%. And that's how they play the game. But U.S. government wants to have you trust them to tell you that you can trust whomever. And the Biden administration has launched a long-awaited Internet of Things cybersecurity labeling program that aims to protect Americans against the myriad security risks associated with internet-connected devices. So this is all these Nest devices and all these things, Siris and all this. All these devices will have this trust thing. But remember, they don't want encryption, and they want a back door. So we don't know what those rules are going to be, but the program officially named the U.S. Cyber Trust Mark of the Beast. Hey, aims to help Americans ensure they are buying internet-connected devices that include strong cybersecurity protections against cyber attack. The Internet of Things, a term encompassing everything from fitness trackers and routers to baby monitors and smart refrigerators, not too intelligent, has long been considered a weak cybersecurity link. Many devices ship with easy-to-guess default passwords and offer a lack of security regular updates, putting consumers at risk of being hacked. So they give you the updates, and then they update themselves into your system. And remember, your systems already have, I think the biggest threat is the Bluetooth. They got two channels on Bluetooth, and one goes a lot farther than everyone seems to think. It's a lower frequency, and it can make mesh networks that are private. And everything, almost everything that you have has one. And that's how they work underneath the skin of it. And that's not even the hardware backdoors that are in there that everybody denies. But here, they're not going to trust you for the encryption you need, but they're going to give you a mark that says you trust us. Moving into the trust us and the world stage and what's going on in the news that's coming down today, and I hope I get to the end of that. Things are changing, and how interesting that they do develop and go through, but I'm not sure where they end up going. Lots of people talk. Everyone's pointing out a lot of things, but not much is going on happening. The division's brewing between the Pentagon and the White House over Biden's Ukraine gamble. Western leaders in private conversations cast doubt on Kiev's odds of winning at the Aspen Security Forum, despite previously hailing Ukraine's alleged progress on the battlefield, according to the press. So everyone's interested in the security, but there is none, right? Even in this story. We'll move on. It's just a big, somewhat delusional, especially at the political level, to consider that the Ukrainian government is going to do much of anything. If it wasn't for the support from the West, that we would not even be hearing. Ukraine would not be a story. It would not have happened, and really quickly. So, again, security is an interesting word, and it all depends on who is using it. None for you. Only for the master, if you will, on this. And we have a division building. And so this is me telling you again, stay quiet on a lot of this stuff and go ahead and let it go, and it comes on us. There was no division brewing, it wouldn't make a news article, because there's some people, the United States doesn't appear to look forward very far. Some people inside their Biden team, is looking forward and saying this is not coming to a good end. Between the securities that they want to extend to themselves and the one they take from us is the chasm that we need to really make sure doesn't connect up. We cannot be silent on the fact that they want to take stuff from us that we need for ourselves. Ukraine says, he's here, for those of us that are studying, this is not news, it seemed to be news, but it seems to be a political mind trap for a lot of people. Ukraine was not going well to win overall, but I think there was a lot of political pushing, and this offensive was geared to break through. I'm not sure on the Pentagon side, but on the political side, I think a lot of them did not fully realize that they still don't grasp the strength and the strategic position and the resolve on the Russian side, nor do they really understand the cultural issues and lots of things they don't understand, and they are set on the one path. Let me get you back to the first few minutes of this broadcast. That's what they're doing when they try to lock you down. They don't have any of this forethought or a comprehensive idea of what's going to happen. They just want this. It's a very blinded, myopic view of what the government wants. And I was telling you about this part about the resolve of the Russian side. That it was. I told you I was made a comment. The week later, I got corrected by Putin, and they told us their resolve, and they gave us the definition and the list of what was going to happen. And then we come up just now, we got to the dustbin of history, because these folks in here, where the rift is starting inside the White House, are looking for security for them, but not for considering the other people who, in this case, Russia, is strong enough to protect themselves. What I've been asking us as people, we should have that power ourselves to protect ourselves. We might actually don't, because we've been quiet for a long time. But I pointed out, and this story brings it out, what Russia is. Its people, its conditions, however, my opinion about it is irrelevant. They have a culture that is not going to be defeated. And they are telling us pretty straight up about all that, and Biden's team, Biden's administration, the United States government's administration, looks down the path only for their interest. And that turns out to not be good for you, just like it's not going to be good for Russia, but Russia has said, enough's enough. Over. Done. And we get this guy, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, the Blinken idiot. That's all this guy can do. They don't have a forward look at all. And the comment made here from a CIA veteran, Larry Johnson, who wrote his blog in July 23rd, it is alarming that America's top diplomat is so divorced from reality. And I just got to keep pointing back to the beginning of these broadcasts for these things coming on. They want you to trust them. They want to take away your protection. Your security doesn't mean anything. They're completely divorced from the reality of what we need. And it's been a long time coming before we even see it in the news that this is not even new news. This is what's been happening. And I think there was a commenter in the bottom of that story that the war is to protect the Biden family's investments in political power in Ukraine. I thought that was pretty insightful, because it looks like that's in fact the case, as well as other financial interests. Right? Don't underestimate all that. Still playing. It's all playing there. And this is, again, war is for money. Value to somebody, corporations, military industrial complex, the financial complex, the things that are destroying us because we engage and allow those systems to engage in us, like they're going to do with the Fed coin, the world coin, all that token citizenship. So here we have a rift happening inside the White House. We have another one going on in the news right now. It's pretty interesting. And I don't know what these fools did, but they pulled a big bad one, and a judge got angry. And so there's apparently been, maybe it was Trump putting some judges enough out there, but there's not the same mentality in the judgeships that may have been a while back, that we see that the court torpedoes Hunter Biden's criminal plea deal. Getting back to the commenter, that Biden's family investments in political power in Ukraine. We've heard those stories. We saw the overthrow. Newland, another type of Blinken idiot, just in a different meat suit. Same type of thing. This has been going on. It's their war, actually. But the Hunter Biden business condition, I mean, is this guy another, I just wonder, is he just a player, too? Is he another agent? I mean, what is he doing? I mean, the guy's just not wrapped too tight at some level, but he seems to be living a charmed life. When we saw the plea deal, I talked a little bit about it. I don't really like talking about this stuff. It's not my game at all. But there's just some obviousnesses that come through that I need to point out. But here, if you read this story, his attorney's really messed up. And this is what you got to be careful about your representation, because it acts for you. And that's like you acting. Well, court torpedoes Hunter Biden's criminal plea deal. A judge has pushed back on terms given to the United States President's son and found that his legal team lied to block a challenge. Hunter Biden's bid to resolve the criminal case against him is in tatters after the United States judge raised concern over the plea agreement that he struck with federal prosecutors and threatened to sanction his legal team for trying to deceive the court into blocking a congressman's challenge to the deal. Now, this is a very interesting power struggle going on here, and that judge is now saying that congressman's challenge was valid. The point is, the legal team messed up. Hunter Biden may pay for it. And they're saying that what I could read and find out about a little quickly is find out about this judge is not real happy with this. And so this may start going south pretty quickly. White House comes out right after this, and apparently it was a question. Biden will not pardon his son, Hunter, over tax and firearm charges. Those may be gone. Those may be toast. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre on Thursday said President Biden, Joe Biden, would not pardon his son, who is facing tax and firearms-related charges. The taxes are typically short time in or cash. The firearms, remember, he had a pre-plea deal that he just had to go through some sort of program, and it would be expunged from his record like it never even happened. Right? So he's saying, the Biden's saying that they wouldn't pardon him. And then we get this next story. We'll see, as these charges pile up, what he will or will not do. I don't believe he can say he will do that before an election anyway. But after this happened, there was more charges that were brought. Hunter Biden faces new charges after plea bargain collapse. And so this guy may have got himself in a bad way and thought he was surfing the tsunami, and he lost his board. And it was all because of his representatives, his attorneys, the scoundrels. This is Ray McGovern speaking. Ray McGovern is said to be a CIA analyst. I'm a little questioning some of his stuff, but anyway, we'll just kind of go with it. The bigger thing, he says, is that not only do they have the goods on son Hunter, McGovern said, rumor has the president himself saying, what shall I say, untruths? His main position on all this stuff for years is, quote, I never discussed with my son anything having to do with his business, period. But Archer, looking for his own clemency deal after his conviction for fraud in June, has undermined that claim. I guess the White House is now saying, instead of I never discussed with my son anything having to do with his business, the White House is saying the president has always said that he has never been in business with his son. See the difference? And this is a critical observation Ray, I think, makes here, how they shift their point and make it plausible enough. And you can go back and find the tapes where he said it, but that's what he meant. See, the new statement comes forward. So we're talking about the commenter bringing up this Ukraine, Hunter Biden business, family business and ties in Ukraine, and the Burisma thing. And his attorneys may have just sunk his battleship. I don't know. If the judges, the judges, we talk about him a lot of time in the negative. In this case, this guy needs to see some time. He needs to see some punishment. We need to expose this whole cabal, if you will. The whole thing needs to be opened up. And a judge can go that way, too. And so I'm not sure where this goes, but it's an interesting turn all of a sudden. Now, all these businesses that we heard that the war is going on for Ukraine was based on the democracy of Ukraine. And those of you that study will probably burst out laughing or whatever here. We know that. But I'm pointing out, again, there's really real harm going on over there relative to that lie. Because it's more business deals. War is for money and all that, and control, and the land that's over there, possibly why BlackRock is involved, and we're going to hear someone else has always been involved. I hadn't heard too much more about. You always think of it being back, them being back there, the family, but they're just now coming to the fore to be recognized. But the democracy that we think we hear, we move in to what's going on in Ukraine, and. Last week I was saying that, you know, there's a moral reprehensibility in not standing up for things that are morally, for not standing up to stop things that are morally reprehensible. And I referenced the Crimea Bridge. The United States had to be involved with their technology to run a submarine, a semi-submerged sub type explosive devices in there. Is the only thing I could figure that they were involved. Whether or not it comes out, I don't know. But the United States is sitting there trying to think like, oh, we're telling them not to do this stuff and all that. But the United States is morally obligated to step up. Like the guy, the sailor, wanted to step up to save, make sure his dog was okay. There's something that you just got to go. You just have to do that. That's what that deal was. The same thing here with that bridge. It's just a civilian bridge. They can't. It's not heavy enough built to do the military. They have a different track for that, I told you. The United States should have stood up to say that's enough. It's morally reprehensible to attack civilians, kill mothers and fathers, and maim their daughter, let alone hit the infrastructure for people. And then, remember, I told you, it's really going after the the economics. That's what that's about. Again, it's all that. But we wanted to point out, what is this? What is Kiev relative to its democracy? And we see this story. Remember, we have our First Amendment in the United States, and you have the freedom of religion, the freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, and all those things. Kiev pressing for the elimination of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. So all this democracy that's going on, that Biden's they're promoting, and the Newlands and the Blinken idiots and all that other stuff, they're attacking the freedom of religion. Not all of them, just this one. And this one's tied over to Russia, so this is, again, the target. But they don't care not to step up. You'd think the United States, or government, would say, you can't do that, Ukraine. There's no sense to do it. There's no need to do it. But no, we don't. Again, morally, there's global reprehensibility going on. Last week's title. Moscow has stated that, you know, Ukraine's legislative system is designed to keep the Kiev regime spearhead to the current crackdown on the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. The Russian foreign minister has published a report on Kiev's regime's illegal actions targeting the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, its clergy and parishioners. I mean, I could read more. There's no sense. You come in and read if you're interested in what they're how they're persecuting the religions. I've talked to you a little bit about how in the United States they're persecuting Christians. I'm not worried about what you think about that. I'm saying that people are being persecuted for something the Constitution says you have a right to do. And so we see the United States government allowing that in Kiev, in the Ukrainian government, against another people who have long-term belief system here. In fact, this orthodoxy is probably the witness against what we're seeing in the West, in the Roman side. And we can go through it. It'll explain to you. I won't read it. I was going to read a little bit, but I won't read more. You'll read what they found, and you can get a copy of the report and study it. My point is that if the United States government will not stop the attack on an Orthodox church, they won't care about stopping it here. They were going to be taking them out here. So those of you that are in a church or a church system, I'm going to suggest to you that happened in the United States probably around the 90s. They were taken over. And so you need to really think about that. And if you didn't see that or you don't understand that, you need to go maybe do some study about learning and discerning a little bit better. So what we see over there, they will do to us here, or they've already done to us here in the United States. Morally reprehensible that any government would take out a people's faith, take out the faith of people. We see it in our First Amendment. If I just use that as a standard, why is the United States not stopping this point? I'm just sitting here thinking about it. There's a pause. Freedom of religion and freedom of the press is supposed to be sacrosanct the United States. Why does the United States allow for the violation over there? As we hear, now let's move to the press just a bit. The MOD reveals details of deadly Ukrainian strike on Russian reporters. One journalist was killed and three others were wounded in the attack of Zaporozhye region, the Russian Defense Ministry has confirmed. This is, again, attack on journalists is not new. But Ukraine is supposed to be some pinnacle of democracy, and they're attacking the press. Ukraine used cluster bombs in a shelling of a group of Russian journalists in the Zaporozhye region, killing RIA Novosti, the news agency correspondent Rostislav Zyrulayev. In the Russian Defense Ministry said the attack was targeted crews from RIA Novosti and Izvestia media outlets that took place around noon, and as a result, the strike carried out by the Ukrainian Air Force, armed forces, with the use of cluster munitions. Four journalists suffered injuries and varying degrees of severity. And so this guy, I guess this journalist was a pretty good one. They lost him. So what's Russia? What's Kiev doing there? Why again? A lot of people don't know that they attack their own people. They attack their own people in Ukraine, but they attack them because they actually are more Russian and believe in more Russian-sided things. That country is from the Soviet Union. It was an ill-advised gift, I suppose. And so what is this democracy that we talk about as the United States as a government protecting and supporting and all that, when you see that the Biden cabal is in there just exploiting the whole thing as well? is really just the definition that we're not there because of a democracy. And the United States is not a democracy. So it's, the country's not a democracy, and we're not interested in supporting a democracy somewhere else. And we're not even, I don't think, the republic at this point. And I don't think if it is, we haven't kept it too well. Republic, if you can keep it. Go read up on that. West knew Ukraine wasn't ready for a counteroffensive. Again, why would you go into war without it having enough ammunition or figuring it out that you needed more before you started out? This is all telegraph stuff. This isn't even news. Of course they knew. It's not about the war. The war was set in an economic frame, and we lost. The United States lost. I told you, spitting into the hurricane. And I just hear a couple weeks ago, Putin, it was like a boomerang. We threw it and it came back and whacked us. Of course Ukraine wasn't ready to go to the counteroffensive. Of course the United States government and all the Congress knew, the Intelligence Committee knew, the military knew, this is not a war. This is not even a proxy war. I don't know why how people get this. Lots of people claim it's a proxy war. How is it a proxy war when you send a bunch of people that are going to go die because they're not capable, actually? How is that a war? How is that proxy anything? As Russians have identified it, it's a meat grinder. We're intentionally letting them come in and killing them because it's what they do. They're not here to win. They're here to cause strife, and the West is using those people till the last Ukrainian to come attack us. But they're not making a war of it. They're trying to do that war was economic, why they attacked the bridge. Because it was economic, remember? Tourism. There was no military value in that. So, again, I'm looking at the title. You heard it from the guy from behind the woodshed, didn't you? Didn't we say that? They weren't ready for a war. There wasn't going to be a war. Did we need to wait this long through fossil media to finally tell us what the guy behind the woodshed said a year earlier? I mean, this is our other thing. It's kind of laugh. I have to laugh. It's funny. I'm noticing people, things I've broadcast here behind it, and it comes through the Twitter feed a month later. I'm like, why is this even here? What happened? Why did it miss everybody at the beginning? It's pretty interesting. You know, West knew Ukraine. Of course, it wasn't going to be a war. It's a tool to advance corruption, essentially. And who's behind it? We finally hear out. I guess maybe some people may know this. You can say that this in a generality, but I mean, now we get the proof, and I don't like to blame people or point the finger until I get a better proof. And we're looking at the media. Maybe it's a little bit off. Who knows? But Rothschilds have had fantastic relationship with Ukrainian government members. The prank call reveals. These prank caller guys are pretty funny. I don't know how they do it. I haven't heard of much. I don't think I've heard a little bit about just one call just for a short time. But they are pretty good. They seem to get in with people. I don't know. Maybe it's people's ego that gets around them. But the Russian prankster duo Vladimir Kuznetsov and Alexei Stolyarov, known professionally as Vovan and Lexus, have once again managed to trick a prominent Western figure into spilling the beans on a poignant geopolitical matters. Having previously managed to dupe people such as former U.S. President George W. Bush, American best-selling author Stephen King, and U.K. Secretary of Defense Ben Wallace, the pranksters now managed to outwit none other than Alexandre de Rothschild, the executive chairman of Rothschild & Company, and the great-great-great-great-grandson of the infamous Rothschild banker dynasty founder. Apparently convinced that he was talking with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Rothschild revealed how he and his enterprise intend to partake in the restoration of Ukraine in sectors such as energy, housing, and logistics. And there you have it. And this is not much different than a BlackRock. BlackRock's taking, I think, land and production as well. They're also investing in housing, so that must be the big deal coming. Anyway, so we have, he says, and we have a fantastic relationship with people in your government, he added. that we now see they're involved behind the scenes if it wasn't before. Took a prank to figure it out. The Vanguards are up front with it. Yeah, they've already promoting to more, get more people in, but it's a big money thing, folks. It's not a war. That's, they went to war knowing that there wasn't going to be a war. Africa has a rightful place in deciding world fate, says Putin. So where we have the existential threat to Russia, we now see the pivot that they're making into go to the so-called multipolar world, and they're going to Africa, and this is the, also the BRICS. They got South Africa as the, as one of the players there. The statement here, though, is one of globalism. And then I have to ask a question where he talks about this. Africa has a rightful place in deciding the world's fate is the title. He actually comes up with that in the beginning, in the body. Moscow supports, quote, granting African countries their rightful place in the structures that determine the world's fate, including the UN Security Council and the G20, and supports reforming the global financial and trade institutions in a way that meets their interests. How interesting. The financial and trade institutions is nothing more than the Ukraine battle in the financial, and you watch the world supposedly split. Yeah, they split too, into the hurricane. But you're watching BRICS be that organization that's going to bring all those people together in a financial system, in their system. Now, I want to return back to this. It's fine in a way. You look over at what he said, and you say, yeah, Africa should stand up for itself. I don't know about, I've heard there's lots of problems in Africa, but I don't know how much of that's fomented by the West and, you know, these CIA types of things and the springs. And then we have Russia's own Wagner group down in there, and although they're not really there, right? Putin said they're not existing. But should Africa countries have the rightful place in the structures of the world that determine the world's fate? Really? Listen. You don't hear the WEF right there? I don't think so, folks. I don't think that Africa should be given a place in a structure to determine the world's fate. I think maybe we should determine our own, if I be so bold to say so. I don't think, again, that Putin is, on the one hand, I think he's doing what he has to do for Ukraine. He has to do something against NATO. Yes. And they have a certain thing. And the dustbin of history happened. And they tried to make peace. And they had a peace signature, and the West wouldn't allow it. That he has to deal with. But to turn around and then say, oh, we're going to embrace the UN Security Council, and Africa needs to have a place in it, and we'll determine our global new global structure will determine the fate of the world? Do you think so? Really? Do you want that? Who do you think Putin really is here? Read between the lines on this one. No control of a group of countries is entitled to determine the fate of the world, folks. I hope you get that right there. And so this guy, when I may sound sympathetic or empathetic or supportive of Russia's position, listen very carefully to the particulars I'm talking about. Because I think this is a big cover for all of it. Again, the economic cover. There it's an attack. It may have been a planned attack for a future condition. So they have to bring down the United States. The only way I think they can pull the United States back out is to anticipate what they're doing with the BRICS, which is to say that there's gold supporting the SDR. That's another style of ruse in a way. But if the United States dollar would support itself again with gold, they would demolish all that, I think, I believe. And so that's what I'm saying to the people of the United States need to get back to not being cashless, not being moneyless. They need to engage money, which is actually gold and silver, money, specie. And so this is how we watch it. They're going to move this thing into fiat. It'll be a fiat thing. Then it goes into that token citizenship. Way worse. So we listen very carefully about what Putin is saying here and how he's embracing inclusivity here, folks, right here. Yeah, we want Russia to be part of it. And we want them to, and now we do exalt their position. We want them to help determine the fate of the world. Now, I don't think so, folks. As we hear, these folks don't even know what they're doing that way as far as actual finances. It's all about scheming and scamming, ultimately. And he's playing up against the destruction, the planned destruction, it seems like to me. And the Fed system's been over 100 years. It's probably run its time out. That's about as long as they run when they do this. So that's another interesting natural law, if you will, seemingly. But here, Bidenomics, like I called feeblenomics, right? Bidenomics driving U.S. economy into dead end. It's not, so we blame Biden, and now Bidenomics, he puts a brand on it, so he wants to get elected. And you know, I don't know where that's going to go, but you've got the type of election system that you've got. I don't know how you can even have faith in any of it. I've told you back, I've lost all concern for elections on 2 points. One was I realized what the voter registration was. And when you read those words and you start getting knowledgeable about what those words mean and the clauses that are there in that little voter registration, then you'll realize what you're doing. And then I found out the voter machines way back when they still had EEPROMs, a programmable memory, they used an ultraviolet light. I've explained this a little bit. And they hooked up to the internet by baud rate, not anything we have today. Well, I guess we have baud rate, but it's not like 9600 or something like that. I realized that those machines could be programmed. And when we asked for the code, they wouldn't give it to us, just like today. So that was when I ended. But when I saw what the status was that they're developing under the voter registration and then found that the elections are could be cooked way back when, well before Windows, I realized that we're being, as a people, being scammed. So moving back into here, we don't know what the future is going to be to the movers and shakers and behind the scenes. They want to brand Bidenomics. They want to say that we're driving it into a dead end. I don't know if I agree with all these stories. I don't know if it's a dead end on purpose. Is Biden driving it? No, he's not capable of doing much of anything. But they're going to promote it like it is, like he's got some hand on the tiller of the ship of state, run aground on the rocks of bad economy and things. But it's a bunch of people that are playing games that don't know what they're doing. Powell, the Fed guy, he just said we don't know what we're doing. What was it? The IMF woman, I don't know their names. It doesn't come to me. She says, inflation just showed up out of nowhere. Now they're talking, recession may be being avoided. But when you look at the real numbers, and I'll give you somebody who I think I've been getting more and more information from here in a bit. But when you look at the real numbers, they stop, the employment numbers. They cook the books on that. Yeah, that's how they're doing, like Kobe swindle. It seems all the same after a while. I now can't see much difference in how they do all this. But they get people in markets to move, or the markets use it as an excuse to move, whichever direction they want. Joe Biden recently appended Jarek on Bidenomics is detached from reality, given that the train of the U.S. economy is moving into a dead end, Professor of Economics Jack Rasmus says. And so we can read what he's saying. And he goes through the analysis of how the books are cooked a bit and these great numbers of jobs and this and that. And remember, a lot of these jobs are the ones that were lost from the so-called Kobe swivel from the pandemic, that are just people getting jobs back. But I told you a long time ago, I think it was back before like 2010, and so what they're going to move us into, people, your jobs are going to move from full-time to part-time. And they're going to try and drive it there so they don't have to give you the benefits that they did. And you're going to have more jobs. And that's what we're also finding. And they're a lot quicker and a lot shorter. And as I say that, I have to remind myself to tell you, I think it was the Teamsters that just were able to get a lot of the part-timers that they had up into full-time, like 7,000 jobs into full-time, because it's known that they're pushing everybody into shorter-term jobs. And part of that is that benefit thing underneath in the medical. Now, I told you this a long time was going on. This is what these numbers are not really telling us. They don't tell us. Also, remember, they give us economic data. Remember, I told you the interest rate raises. They want to take your jobs. That's still happening. When you look at the numbers figured out truthfully, at some point it may only be breaking even, and there's some indication they're actually turning down again. They're taking your jobs. So the money is also having, you have a problem. Those new jobs may have less money. This new teacher contract, if I read the story correctly, it actually raised some of that pretty well, and they're going to get a nice raise up. So I guess this is a pretty good deal for the Teamsters. Not many other people in the country are going to enjoy that as prices are shoved up. The interest rates are really only if you're going to need loans. And it also drives the markets to go invest in other places. If they can make more money on the interest, they won't go to gold. But remember, the gold price is irrelevant relative to you watching it going up and down. It's the power against what else you would use to buy in relation. As I told you, it's a friend of mine, a miner, told me, he goes, if we had gold relative to diesel fuel is a lot cheaper in ratio than it used to be, if you have gold. And this is what I've been asking, again, another discussion we were having about why it is we need to stay in commodities. Don't worry about its fluctuation, like it dropped $50 on today's news. It was all the fraudulent news, but it drops because money goes where the interest rates are, the value of the dollar pushes it. That $50 spread right now, it doesn't mean anything relative to costs for other things. So Feeblenomics is what I said behind Woodshed about what was going on. He's not doing anything. And the people that are claiming to do stuff don't know what they're doing. And we want to keep playing about with this. Well, we're going to watch where they drive. It's an economic war. I keep telling you, Ukraine is, we think it's a proxy war. No, it's an economic war. The United States lost that war. But the plan may be they have to bring the United States down somewhat to balance it out in the world, to have the good cop, bad cop system, which you see the BRICS developing. They pretend to have a gold-based thing. The United States could end that right now by going ahead and doing that. And yet we don't. So that's, again, a plan. Fed raises rates to 22-year high. I look at these dates and I'm trying to figure out, well, and I told you this before, there was a time when rates were up at 20%. 5% is a joke. I said I was on a phone with lenders. I had to be on the phone every minute to make sure that until the party signed the contract, they got the right quote, because it was rising so fast. It was only digital points, but it was still rising. We're up, I think it might have been 23% right at the end, 21 to 23%. And we're at five now? Ridiculous. People are freaking out? I don't think so. And this is the big setup. The Fed Reserve announced Wednesday that 25 basis point hike in interest rates, the resuming monetary tightening in the beginning 18 months ago. See, so now they're just getting what they did again. I told you 18 months. It's happening now from 18 months ago. They're looking now 18 months in the future and having to divine what they're doing, I suppose, because they really don't know what they're doing. In assessing the appropriate stance of monetary policy, the committee will continue to monitor the implications of incoming information for the economic outlook. Monitor. Amazing stuff. The committee, would be prepared to adjust the stance of monetary policy as appropriate if risks emerge that could impede the attainment of the committee's goals. The committee's goals. Remember, talk about financial institutions that Putin's talking about? It's their goals. Remember the sustainable goals? Yeah. That starts to pull this forward. The committee's assessment will take it into account a wide range of information, including readings here, folks, on labor market conditions, inflation pressures, inflation expectations, and financial and international obligations. And so I'm just wondering if they also read tea leaves, throw bones, dem bones, they throw bones, they read runes. What else do they divine? They call the oracle. Maybe they do call oracle the corporation. Is this how they do this? Divining out what's going on. And when they tell us, they don't know what they're doing. And so the view for the government, the investors, were to look at the IMF here this week to see what, I think it's Lagarde was going to do. I don't know, I guess that's her name, I don't know. Again, I don't keep up with these people, but at any rate. And the interesting thing to me is that she comes out and she raises the rates too, but then she hits something. And she hits, again, where they're going, but puts a warning on you. Like they don't want you to be secure, but they want you to trust them. IMF issues cryptocurrency warning. Crypto assets should not be granted to a status of official currency or legal tender, the monetary fund has argued. Now, what the Fed, beyond the Fed coin, the Fed now thing, when they move into your culture, your token citizenship, that will be considered a currency. And yet the IMF is saying don't do that. The International Monetary Fund has strongly recommended against granting cryptocurrencies the status of official currency or legal tender, citing the need for stringent regulation. Oh, your cryptocurrency is not going to be done unless they can regulate it. Theirs is going to be fun. In the report issued this month, the IMF argued that the comprehensive legal foundation that would address both private law and financial law aspects is essential to effectively regulating crypto. You catch it? Private law. This is private law that they're putting on you. And financial law aspects is no different than what Putin is saying. The structure will guide the global economy. They're all talking the same language, different words, but private law is at work here, not governments, not public law. And my mind is kind of, it has a little flash of freak out a bit when I see that private law and realize what these tokens are going to do when I'm thinking about all y'all who may have to engage it. And we're going to be a real surprise population here in the future. And, you know, they could use that any way they want. But they're utilizing these failures like the FTX failure. That was another setup for a takedown, it seems. I reported on all that. So they come out and say the cryptocurrency needs to be regulated, like I've been telling you. But the government has theirs. It's going to be considered the regulated crypto. And it's the regulated is you. And the regulation is your purchases will be viewed as the expression of the third party that provides you that token, whether it's WorldCoin or the Treasury or Fed or whoever it is. And so they're telling us they're raising up, they take away your jobs, they're confining the system down to what they need. They pretend that there's a division in the world. They hint that there might be gold support for certain things. The United States, I said, come in and just support the dollar back with the gold done. This whole thing, I think, blows up. But they won't do it. And that tells you, again, that's a plan. Now, the IMF comes out, the Global International Monetary Fund, and says cryptos need to be regulated. Like I've been telling you, they were going to do all this time. And I'm almost wondering, I'm starting to think a little bit here, maybe the SEC has overextended its welcome in how much attacking it's doing, because it may have broke itself here on that last, what was it, Ripple? They had to make that decision, and they finally did it, and they did it because SEC went too far. And they gave the in to the company to finally be able to say that. So this is an interesting game going on. But these IMF cryptocurrencies and all this, they're saying there's a warning. They talk about the FTX, stable coins and things like that. And what do we hear today? About the U.S. authorities dropped charges against SBF involving campaign finance funds. In the latest court ruling, the United States Department of Justice announced a decision to withdraw the campaign finance charge against Sam SBF Bankman-Fried. This is going to be Freed here, folks. He just got freed. That's how you pronounce his name for this. The founder and former CEO of bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange FTX. Isn't that interesting how they use that? The IMF is using that to go regulate cryptocurrency. The charges are dropped. This charge is probably the most important one relative to the nation, because it went after the campaign finance. This thing they had set up is a way around the financial limitations, is what I believe, and this needs to be continued. So they figured out a way to drop these things. Well, it became an example to make regulation on your stuff, the way the insiders use it, do the campaign and election nearing nonsense. This guy's going to go, wow, he's freed. Not fried, he's freed. Bankman-Fried. Nope, he freed. He freed, and the United States government's going to let him walk. Why? Because they're going to continue doing this nonsense. And we the people are never going to really keep up, I don't think. But like I said, I see too many people who who sound like they're doing good, you know, they want to tell you they're doing good work, the congressmen, and so they're not doing anything. Some of this information, they now, oh, we have the proof. Well, we predicted, and we could see, and we could predict that it was happening years ago. When you got the proof, why didn't you move on it, is my question. You have the, what we thought was an idea, a plausible idea that needed the proof, and you find the proof. Why isn't everybody moving to arrest it all, is our problem. It's going to show, so tell us, we've got a bunch of people talking and not acting. Well, they're acting, but they're not moving to stop and arrest. So this guy, interesting, I just found this very interesting. IMF cryptocurrency, they use the FTX problem to want to regulate, and then this guy who caused it, and this guy that's been manipulating your government elections and the influence, this kid, I can't get it. I wasn't made for this world, folks, if these people are the ones that, are, that at this age are able to pull this off. There's some connections in the world, some bright, shiny stars over people I have never seen in my life. And this is what comes out of it. It's not good for the people. They use it to destroy you. This guy walks. Bankman freed. Fascinating. Another guy of notoriety comes out, and he is found dismembered in a suitcase. If you're not on the right side of the money here, watch out. Police have launched a murder investigation after the dismembered remains of a missing millionaire, Fernando Perez Algaba, 41, were discovered by a group of children in Argentina over the weekend. The grisly case came to light after the kids found a red suitcase filled with body parts while playing by a stream in the town of Ignacio Budge, Venezuela, Buenos Aires, province, on Sunday. Jam Press reported the children's parents notified the Buenos Aires police, who inspected the package and reportedly found the victim's leg and forearm inside, discovering another whole arm and stream. So Bankman Fried is fine, a campaign finance agent, and this guy who is running crypto is dismembered. Now they talk about, I think there's a bit of story here that wants to help you focus. He had debts and this and that. Put you in the idea that maybe they killed him for that, but I'm not so sure. This guy was a pretty big promoter of things, and I just wonder how much of that caught up with him. While we have Bankman Fried, this guy gets dismembered and put in a suitcase. Massive $78 billion flight rocks American banking system as Feebonomics is attempting to become some brand called the Bidenomics, which he has no control over whatsoever. We have a secret bank run going on, and it's quite a bit of money. It doesn't seem like a lot when you hear about trillions relative to the system it's coming from. This is I thought this was a somewhat of a big story that's kind of underneath the surface a little bit. Massive $78 billion cash flight rocks American banking system. Money's moving, folks. Get your money out. Continue doing what I've asked you to do. Months ago, get it out, walk it out. When they said that don't do the bank run, do the bank run. Walk your stuff out if you have any. Get it out, or get enough out that you're not hurt when they start to pinch it. In an attempt to combat surging inflation, the Federal Reserve has implemented its fastest interest rate hike since the 1980s. There you go. See, this is nothing compared to the 80s. We're like four times less at this point. And people are freaking. I don't get it. But the banks are going down at this level. Figure this one out. Figure that out. Four times more, 80s, didn't happen. Nothing happened. I mean, you just couldn't get loans. You couldn't afford houses. It just peaked, and it peaked out. This one is killing banking systems, and it's only 5%, which has yielded unintended consequences here since then, the severe side effects of banks. Only 5%. The spike in customer withdrawals from American banks saw $78 billion evacuated from the bank accounts between July 5th and 12th. Wow. I didn't notice that before. 7 days, according to the latest data from the Federal Reserve Economic Data Fred system. Under the same circumstances, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank were hit in March by a huge cash drain. Also, First Republic Bank had to solicit tens of billions of dollars from the other banks to stay afloat. At any rate, this is the FVB bank collapse. This is the FTX. It's all integrated. They talk about here the attempt to combat surging inflation. They don't know what they're doing. But again, in a fiat system, it's going to go downhill. And we the people, should not be involved in this. We should be looking ahead, really, ourselves. And a part of how you're going to do that, it doesn't matter the value of gold it swings, it goes over 2070, goes back down to 1950 where it's around now. 1850 where it was even three years ago. It doesn't matter. Because then you look at what you would buy with that gold, and that's the prices of the commodity there. And you're going to watch them pretty consistent. That's not something to be afraid of. It's a store of value, not a profit-making system. The ups and down swings of gold are because people are moving money from the safe haven of gold into speculation to try and make a few percent more. And any more now, it's a few percent more on microseconds of trading, it seems, if I understand that right. But massive $78 billion cash flight. Folks, get your money out. Walk it out of the system. I was kind of chuckled about that, just the fact that who hears about this until you're told, but there it is. People are. There's a silent knowledge in people. I'm happy to see it, actually. But let's not keep the cash necessarily. Use your cash local, your fiat local, but move yourself into silver and gold coin, and maybe we can start working and doing that. Remember, as I've said, the value is stable. A dime still buys a loaf of bread. A dime, silver dime, still buys a good loaf of bread, or a decent one. And so that's the correlation in my mind. Simple stuff. U.S. economy grew by 2.4% in second quarter, but labor market slowing. Exactly what I told you this would do. Not that I'm an economist, I'm just reading and trying to synthesize myself. I'm really behind the eight ball in this. I try to keep up. I don't understand a lot of it. But I said that the interest rates would be dropping. They want your jobs. And they need to get your jobs because they need to slow down. They said want the economy to still slow down a bit. I don't know why, but they do. And that's we're being stubborn, they say. But I wanted to point out about these labor market slowing. I mentioned it earlier in the broadcast. If you've done any study on this, you know it too. They cook the books on all of this stuff. They make it look like Bidenomics is something he's doing. It's like he'll take credit for a lot of jobs being made, but he won't tell you those jobs are after the pandemic when people lost their jobs and have to go find jobs. They're going back to those jobs. They don't tell you that when you go out, you're considered retired, you're considered not on the rolls, and they don't have to then count you anymore when you hit a certain status. They play this funny game with words and names and statuses. The U.S. economy beat many economists' estimates for growth in the second quarter of 2023, but the steam that has kept it above water may soon be running out. And so you have people now telling us how that works. But to my mind, it's just pretty simple. They cook the books. They cook these statistics. The markets run with them, but they're not right. And there's honest people that will do the work. They understand this stuff, and they'll tell us how it's interpreted, and we will see the truth that it's certainly not what we're being told. It's not just the steam running out. It's not there to begin with. This almost gives a false impression there's steam to run out. No, it's just cooked books. The only steam is the cooking of the books. According to new data released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, an agency of the United States Department of Commerce, the U.S. gross domestic product increased by 2.4% between April and June. The data shows an increase in consumer spending, non-residential fixed investments, private inventory investment, and spending by local, state, and federal governments. Now, let's get back to that right there. Remember, I talked to you, we found out, I didn't know this until I read it in an article, I read it to you, that the gross the domestic product, it includes government spending. Think about that. Think of that fraud. That alone is enough to just blow this out of the water. Because you go back to looking at the gross national product of output from anybody who gets government funding that's not the government, like a non-government organization or some grant company that gets grants, that's all government funding. You throw that into your mix, you're doing GDP, it's just government spending. Your GDP is going up as the government spends. It's not a good economy in my mind. It's economic as heck. The economy is how good they steal from you. It's how easy and how simple and efficient they can steal from you, get you to work for them. How economic is it for them? Not much different than that security, right? So, again, reading these numbers, it gets bogged down. I'm going to send you to someone I've found here, came through a Twitter feed a bit, a little bit ago for me. He's an ex-professor. He's a surviving or recovering professor. He says, I appreciate his discussion. Again, even when he gets out a little bit of economics, I can see I can have a different opinion, and I feel comfortable that I do have a different opinion. He's not, you know, he doesn't have the complete wrap on knowledge, but I appreciate him explaining things. And he actually had a video recently. He says, "Are the job numbers cooked?" I'm going to give you a link to that. You need to listen to him. And he explains another guy who went through and showed how it is. And when you go through all the numbers and all the things and all the adjustments, it's not really a very rosy picture, and it's not one that's looking good to the future. And these are the folks that I think you need to listen to as well. I've followed him just recently. It's given me a little bit better insight. I still don't know what I'm talking about a lot of this, but I can anticipate better now. I'm getting a handle on these non-intuitive type of conditions. Why do things move up and down the way they do? Well, he can help to explain that. He has people he relies on, and it sounds like they know what they're talking about. So I'm going to give you Peter Saint-Ange at PhD to listen to. He's got all kinds of videos, I think like 3 minutes a piece, 333 sometimes, for those of you that are all into that. And I've been pretty impressed with being able to understand what he says he reduces it down, the doublespeak, down to something you can understand. And he has a neat way to present it. He's got a nice insight of things that are, in fact, descriptive reminiscent of other conditions that we can move through time, if you will, to see that essentially this is just a parlor trick that they pull on us. Speaking of Twitter and then the parlor tricks, Twitter is renamed X and says goodbye to the iconic blue bird logo. And if you're on Twitter, you'll see you got the when it loads up, it puts the X on it now. I haven't really researched too much. I'm not really impressed with all this. I've told you I'm a lot concerned for people to think that this Twitter, now X, is something more than what Putin is talking about, a system, a financial structural system that you will live your life through. And he's insightful enough to know that's where it's going. I don't know who another. He's got another star he lives under. He's one of the richest men in the world. Pretty amazing. Something completely foreign to me. Clearly foreign to me. But he's one of these few people in the world that seem to have it on. I'm not saying he's really intelligent. I'm not saying he's smart, you know, S-M-A-R-T type. But I don't know that if you look at his past, he's a lot deceptive. But he knows how to play the game really well. So to me, he's a danger in a way. Partly I like his ingenuity. I like his spaceships. I like the people he pulls together to get stuff done. I like that. I like the electric cars. But that's not me liking where it's all going. I see promotion left and right. But Elon Musk's intention to turn the social network into a platform with many more functions. Musk bought Twitter for $44 billion last year. The social media company also recently announced it was limiting the number of daily direct message unverified users can send in what it said as part of an effort to reduce spam. Okay, so that's the other thing that he's doing. It's irritating me a bit. I don't even use much the direct message. I don't use much of Twitter at all, actually. The whole thing is useless. It used to be a tool for my help. They keep changing it, and they've just ruined it, to my mind. And then I'm finding out that I think I have declared on a Twitter that Elon Musk and his new CEO are disingenuous. So I'm not much on the promotion of all this. I do know that he's going to be part and parcel to the change that needs to happen in the future toward the tokenization of people's lives. That people will spend $8 to be verified while he calls it a town square. I don't, folks, what town square do you need to pay $8 in order to be able to stand in the town square? And what town square do you know if you don't pay the $8, you can only be limited to talk to someone in a certain number of ways? It's not a town square. It's his promotion of a town. It's direct democracy is what it'll end up being. If people have studied that a little bit, hopefully you'll see what I'm saying. The shift from the bird image, though, to an X is in the latest sweeping change since Musk bought the platform. And I have nothing, his ingenuity, whatever he wants to do, that's up, you know, fine, great. But since it's tied to the globalism, and I think that hurts people and going to hurt people really very badly, It's going to enslave people. I don't appreciate that. And so he makes this comment. This is what you start listening to what he says. He's, again, as I would criticize Kennedy for stumping with these little phrases that he says stuff that you want to believe in. He says the truth relative to things, and then I tell you, be careful. He's soundbite stumping, and there's a story behind that. And his history, his deed shows he's not. He can talk about all this. He can talk to the facts. But what he does about things is just a side of what he's talking about. Musk does the same type of thing. Here's the thing that got to me, that stood out to me. Musk tweeted Sunday that the idea of changing the logo to X was to embody the imperfections in all of us that make us unique. To embody the imperfections in all of us that make us unique. Sounds pretty inclusive, doesn't it? What a statement. But it means actually what? To embody the imperfections in all of us that make us unique. A bucket full of imperfections would truly be unique for sure, folks. That's what he wants to do? Is a meaningless statement. It kind of sounds like, rings like it has a meaningful statement. It means something. But it's really, if you look at the inclusivity part of that, it's our lowest mediocre standard being put in a bucket is what he wants to reduce everybody to. And he'll do that because he found people, although I have to say, thank you for those of you that didn't yet. I only think he's had a couple hundred thousand people that have paid him. So now they're having to go after the advertiser. Now, if you don't spend $1,000 a month, I think is another plan. You can't have your gold check no more, folks. You see what he's done to these checks? The rainbow colors as well? It's drivel. It's just people thinking that they're going to get something, and he's just keeping them he's getting you down to focus that shiny gold check means something, and you're willing to pay him now the $1,000 to have that shiny gold check. It's a pretty amazing technique, and people are falling for it. Now, again, as I was saying, only maybe 200,000 or 300,000 people have, I think, done it. I think I saw a number, which means millions haven't. And I think that's good. How he monetizes this, I don't know, but he's not after that. Like I told you, what was it, the Microsoft. Microsoft and the, what's the company, what was that name? Darn it, I can't remember the name of that thing. The Messenger. Skype, excuse me. Wow. That wasn't bought because they were going to make money on it. That was bought so they can have that service and maintain the encryption code so they could see everybody's communication. And Zoom, I think, has taken over that position. That's what he's doing here in now X, this Twitter thing. So a bucket full of imperfections would truly be unique for sure, folks. You want to be part of that? He wants to bring you all your imperfections in, and he wants to just be the one that, well, cuts you out, censors you out. If you don't eventually, if you don't kind of cotton to what he's saying, he's going to be insulted. And we've seen stories about that already. And he makes this comment, if you don't think I'm talking serfdom, token serfdom. I made a comment, I think I made a title of a broadcast. Twitter announces new restrictions. Now, I'm talking about this not because I'm promoting Twitter. I could not talk about it. This is a tool for the future they want, is why I'm talking about it. And you need to watch how this works. Watch how this guy works. He's got people behind him doing this stuff. Like I said, I don't know that he's that intelligent myself. He makes some pretty dumb comments a lot of times. He takes credit for things that he actually, well, if you double speak, you can take that credit. But that's how he really takes credit, it seems. Twitter announces new restrictions on verified users will have a daily limit on the amount of direct messages. I talked about that. That's just the heading you can read through. But here's the thing that caught my eye. He knows what he's doing. But listen to this, again, drivel, this doublespeak, non-meaningful, push-the-agenda-forward statement. He writes in a tweet, apparently, Twitter's current lords and peasants system for who has and doesn't have a blue check mark is BS. Power to the people. Blue for $8 a month. Someone want to parse that out for me? Twitter's current lords and peasants are system for who has or doesn't have a blue check is BS. Well, I don't have a blue check, but if I pay him $8, so apparently us peasants still don't get a blue check, but if we pay him $8, it's not a blue lord and peasant situation. You're the lords, and he's the overlord. But he knows what the system is. Lords and peasants. He's the lord, you're the peasant. If you use it, he owns the company. And he's going to make it the everything. The X. He's going to take economics. He's not going to make it on Twitter. He's not going to make it on advertising. He's going to make it on what passes through that system, the services so-called, that he puts together. Twitter's current lords and peasants system, who has or doesn't have a blue check mark, is BS. Power to the people, blue, for $8, is that lords and peasant system. He agrees, if you pay $8, you get to think you're in lords, and he's eliminated that system, and he hasn't changed being the lord, he's the owner, and you still now pay him $8. Sounds like a lot of so much doublespeak to me, just like all the other deceptions that we hear. And it self-promoters. As we move into the next thing, same people, same type of people. The Western establishment just gave itself a World Peace and Liberty Award. Ursula von der Leyen received the judicial equivalent of the Nobel Peace Prize from Justin Trudeau in a perfect self-congratulatory orgy. Fascinating what they do. And people gobble it up. I guess everyone likes a prize. These folks most like stars on the refrigerator or something. Even for just being in the room. Don't participate. Don't win. Don't lose. Can't do that. Get a load of who won and presented a new honor that's modestly being compared to the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm just going to jump to they call it the judicial equivalent because some non-governmental organization called the World created a World Peace and Liberty Award, and they're called the World Law Foundation. They created this award because there's law in their name that media promotes as a judicial equivalent of the world's top award for promoting peace. And when you go read this story, you see what Ursula von der Leyen has done. She's committed all her supplies to Ukraine to make war. As soon as you hear war, who was given the Nobel Peace Prize? This is supposed to be the judicial equivalent of, but Obama. Oh, bummer. This is this type of people these folks are. She's getting this award because one of the things that she did was to present this month's legislature a proposal for a digital green pass. She's tweeted this in March of 2021. The digital green pass was facilitate Europeans' lives. The aim is to gradually enable them to move safely in the European Union or abroad for work or tourism. Why were they unsafe before? Why didn't they just be given permission? Because when you make it this type of a non-governmental organization that makes it look like you're in charge, you get to do that kind of stuff. You're the Lord. No different than Elon Musk is in the tweets. What do you call them? It's interesting. People are saying, what do you call them right now? They're not tweets. You know, the bird went away, right? There's no Twitter. It's X. He folded that Twitter in. It's not gone. It's just not. He's just not representing the brand now with the bird. But what do you call something a tweet that isn't? And he's called it X. I thought it was pretty natural. It would be called an X tweet. And relative to my experience at one of the peasants. That hardly seems to get any coverage. The group of the people that do that group in their congregation together, relative to my relationship with that, I thought it would be a great name that we call them excommunications. Maybe you can come up one too, help promote his brand. But these people are all together. Trudeau, the European Union, these leaders, so-called .wef, the Musks, the globalists of the world, running the same system, self-congratulatory indeed. And they are nothing of the sort of what they promote themselves to. We found, I've reported on this, the Nobel Peace Prize is nothing more than a political prize. You can almost watch the theme of the day working out, the idea of the day, and then you hear someone pop up that's doing that, and you can say, oh, they're going to get a Nobel Peace Prize. How is it the Drone King, President Obama, was given a peace prize? Should be your definitive proof that it's a political prize. It doesn't mean anything, actually. That they are likening this now to a judicial, because someone has law in their name of their organization. I don't know how they're not laughed off the planet. Maybe in one of Elon Musk's rockets to Mars. Why does he want to go to Mars? I don't understand that. I mean, are you going back to the roots of where your civilization ran from because you destroyed that planet? I don't know. What is it? What is it? As I said, there's something not right and not brilliant about some of this. Why don't we just focus on home, such that it is? But you see, who gets in control are self-congratulatory criminals. They're psychopaths. Some are philanthropaths. It's pretty scary in a way, and it's interesting how most people just put up with. So this world peace and liberty, you're listening to nations now speak in this pivot to China that happened. Remember Obama, pivot to China, in this multi-polarity world now that we're coming into, in the shift to Eurasia. Okay, what did I report on already relative to Russia and China, relative to Putin and Xi Jinping? And I said Putin was now embracing Africa, put them in a global structure that they will be part of how to determine the fate of the world. I mean, that turned me off a lot when I read that. These folks are, well, one thing you can give them credit for, they think big. The problem is they think big and they're actually accomplishing their thing. Getting over to Putin and his statement, getting over to the West, so-called, patting themselves on the back for world peace and liberty when they're doing wars and promoting wars in Ukraine and destroying the West and destroying the Africa that now is trying to stand up on itself and has been trying. And then they have their corruption. If you watch, man loving man. Love mankind, all that stuff. It's kumbaya. Cain killed Abel. That, when I realized what Cain killed Abel, what that meant, I realized the world is done. You better find a peaceful place in there if you can. But the West, these WEF types, these globalist types, patting themselves on the back, doing doublespeak, not producing the proof of, or not producing the peace or the liberty that they're claiming. You watch the Putins and the Xi Jinpings get together. They talk about, there were things I report about bringing about globalism. And so I want to move this all over. We're going to see now what I think is coming on the horizon, where I told you before that Obama said there's a pivot to China. And I said, but that's the new world order. That's the yuan coming in. That's going to be the digital world. That's the sesame that they had. That's going to be your social credits that you're going to get. They're going to move. The United States already has their credit system. That's just going to be adopted into that, and more parameters relative to sustainability. There's now moving, I don't think it's a pivot. I think it's now a focusing. They're moving the guns in now. This is a little different to my mind, the way I'm watching this. I think these are the predicates to the war in China. And part of this is driven by the idea that because the economy is going so bad, the government always seem to have a war when they work in a fiat system. If you go to gold, they can't do a lot of this. They have to downsize. Everything has to happen a lot smaller and more methodical. But on these next few links, I'm thinking, I'm watching. I can't tell you there's war. And I can't tell you it's coming next week. But I think we're hearing the drums starting, not the pivot to China that was going to be the globalist pivot, which you're now seeing, and Xi Jinping and Putin being the leaders of that motion, always embracing that UN, which we should destroy as well. But please accept these as an idea that I think we're starting to see the hints that we're talking real war here. We're not talking the social globalist thing. There's the geopolitical, there's the political, there's war, these conditions, there's the economics, there's the bifurcation of the world to keep the good cop, bad cop, there's the balancing act that needs to go on. But we're talking real war, not the stuff that happened in Ukraine, but they're really wanting to go after Russia. Maybe that's Newland's war with Blinken idiot behind him. All the same type of people too pushing it. But we're now hearing the government itself now talking and moving toward open discussion. And it's not globalism. U.S. House passes bill targeting China's claim of sovereignty over Taiwan. The way they got this written is kind of convoluted, but it's starting to signaling more certainly that Taiwan is considered itself, when the United States openly to now says it is part of China. They're starting to become now more officially, the House is more officially coming in to say, no, we have a problem. We're going to have this problem. Experts say the bill highlighting ambiguity in a UN resolution on Taiwan unlikely to pass in the Senate. If that's the truth, and I would suspect that it is the truth. Again, this is the Republicans causing this in the House, but the Democrats won't in the Senate to make it. This is a signal being sent. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill aimed at disputing China's claim of sovereignty over Taiwan. This is a diplomatic nightmare in my mind here. Doesn't seem like much. This is like the existential threat to China that Putin was talking to Russia about. Russia. The bill passed on Tuesday, July 25th, references UN General Assembly Resolution 2758, which removed the Republic of China, Taiwan, from the UN as both the representative government of Taiwan and China. The newly passed U.S. bill states that the resolution does not take, quote, a position on the relationship between the People's Republic of China, PRC, and Taiwan, or include any statement pertaining to Taiwan's sovereignty. It says that, but you know the doublespeak. The bill seeks to amend the Taiwan Allies International Protection and Enhancement Initiative, Taipei, clever act, passed in 2019, which establishes measures to direct U.S. policy toward increasing Taiwan's international recognition. So I'm going to stop there. You can read it. This, I think, is the telegraphing. It's the first salvo of a shift. This is not the pivot to China Obama was talking about going through globalism. This is now geopolitical, war-driven talk. And then what did we see happen in Ukraine? And I told you it was an economic hit. They started sanctioning the country, and then they started sanctioning the officials. We see this bill. U.S. House passes bill to hold Chinese officials accountable for spread of fentanyl. So all this drumbeat about the fentanyl, the other thing is the war on drugs. The United States lost the war on drugs, and we still have that war, is the problem. We fail at every war, it seems. And we're trying to, our failure now is being blamed on China. You know, and they may be the source. I'm not going to say that's the case. Lots of places, I guess, can make this stuff. And it's a serious type of condition. It could be considered an attack. But now the words are coming out. U.S. passes bill to hold Chinese officials accountable. That's like sanctions. That's like putting pressure on their government, their people. The Chinese Communist Party plays a prominent role in every step of the fentanyl crisis, says Representative Andy Barr, sponsor of Stop Chinese Fentanyl Bill. The chamber also approved legislation directing the United States Department of the United States Department, United States State Department, to report on China's efforts to undermine China's Taiwan in the international organizations. And so we're pointing out like sanctions against Russia. They're not going to take this very well. And we're going to just see sanctioned attacks back and forth. It's starting again. It's the start of what looks to be the war drums being set up. And there's another, now someone's actually been looking farther, ahead of this to write about it. Comes out just now. The Coming War with China by Malcolm Kayun. And you can read, he says, I'll just start the first paragraph here. In 3 short years, the world has witnessed the worldwide COVID lockdowns, Americans' dismal retreat from Afghanistan, and the return of a land war to Europe. But there are reasons to believe the dramatic events of 2020s have offered thus far might be only the beginning. If you follow the chatter of Beltway mandarins on an ominous change has taken place over the past year when it comes to China. As decades ago, the Middle Kingdom was a distant concern. 5 years later, it was viewed as silly and uncouth of Donald Trump to rail constantly against Beijing. But in 2023, all that changed drastically. There is now open talk in Washington about the potential war with China and soon. So I've been talking for years about be careful, your sons and daughters are going to war. They've been setting up, I just read another bill, active duty reserves coming up, special for going to Operation Atlantic. They keep pressing this image that there's a war going on in Ukraine. As I've told you, there is no war. You don't walk to a war when you don't have ammunition. And they knew all that. You heard me talk about it already. This is not even a question. So someone is already looking ahead and analyzing this history, this recent history coming on, and I was surprised in a way to see someone's already read. My mind was looking at these points, data points of news coming forward, and then this guy's already writing about it. So I wanted to give him, I guess, credit for being ahead of it. This is where the news started to look like we're going. And I've been saying, watch out. They're setting us up for war. They're looking in a lot of places to make a war. We're in a bad economic condition. If you listen to Peter St. Ange's account and what he talks about, you'll see the setup for a takedown. He'll tell you how, if they wanted to fix it, they could fix it and how. Now, anything that has to be economic is going to have some problems, but it could be fixed. That they're not. I told you, when you have if you have 100% wrong, then it's a plan to be wrong. I mean, odds are you're not going to be wrong 100% just by accident. So these negatives that we see are planned, and we should be going in different directions. And that's why I say then we, the people, need to take that direction, whether or not the system will take that direction. We need to depart by our deed from it. But the United States wants to go to war. We've been hearing the war drums. It's always seemingly all the time, but we now, seemingly these last few weeks, I'm noticing more direct talk about it. Like I say in the articles here, open talk from Washington to China. It's not just the saber rattling. And the United States is really doing some really dumb things diplomatically, which was almost telegraphing a problem as well. Again, the blinking idiot that goes on, that he is, and things that they do. And the lack of decorum that they hold, the lack of respect that they even have for themselves, these people. Yell and bend, bowing like she's got to bow to somebody all the time, and then blinking, bent over to shake somebody's hand, not standing upright. You got to see the symbolism in all that. That's these people. That's what's inside them. But the U.S. Navy is preparing for war in Persian Gulf. Iranians just never learn is the attitude here. But the Iranians are learning, and I may not be able to beat the United States, but they now are understood to be a very formidable power in missile technology. I'm not so sure they couldn't put a hurt on what we got going on over there. But the point is the United States is just moving more and more equipment into the area, using all kinds of excuses going on. U.S. Navy fighter ready to take off is their pitcher. They're promoting this. We're ready to go. The U.S. naval power in the Persian Gulf area usually outnumbers that of Iran. And so the big question seems to be, and partly why I think we're not attacking Russia, is they have some missiles that can take out our carriers. Iran might be that same type of thing. You might have a superpower that's bigger, but it may not be lasting very much longer if their technology is accurate. And they are doing some fairly interesting high-tech stuff there. The Persians are not stupid people, that's for sure, if you look through history. But 20 times in the past 3 years, Iranian forces have tried to board a foreign flag commercial vessel sailing through the narrow Strait of Hormuz into and out of the Persian Gulf, and twice in the span of just a couple weeks this spring, they succeeded seizing one vessel whose crew was they accused of colliding with an Iranian vessel, and another they claimed was involved in a legal dispute. I'm going to end there. You could read the story. This is like a propaganda piece. Remember, I told you last week that the Iranians did get a ship, and it did have contraband on it. So these stories that kind of overlook that. It's building that the United States is preparing to go to war. The United States is looking for a war. And they don't have any other answer, essentially, if you look at it really economically as well. I've been talking about this coming. It's not like you just, I'll be finally right when they find the war. This has been the way it has to go. When you understand a bit about fiat, a bit about this, it's really an insanity in government, and a bit about where I told you when they engage fraud and they monetize fraud, it let loose this a thing. There is no limit. And so this is why I think we're seeing some of this insanity going on. There's no check and balance. You just see, as we are now coming to terms with the fact, lots of people will talk about stuff, but nothing gets done. And this is not unknown in the world. The U.S. will spoil its future in Asia and Pacific by dragging nations into its conflict with China. The world is seeing the United States as nothing but a warmongering country, and they understand that the United States likely needs war. They need to occupy their people with the idea that we're in a war that needs to be fought. So they put y'all back to work, kind of like they did in the World War II. And boy, you Americans can produce when you give them the rights. Give them the right stuff, they can produce. And that's the thing that I didn't understand in the 80s. We gave that all up, just gave it up. It didn't make no sense. And it still doesn't make any sense. And we see it made no sense. Australia and the United States and nearly a dozen other nations kicked off the largest ever Talisman Sabre war games on Friday, which the experts have noted is obviously aimed at preparing the future war with China. One expert told Sputnik the U.S. was clearly trying to drag other nations into the confrontation with China for fear of its own weakness. And what I don't have for you, and you can go find them, and what started to focus me about this thing going on is the United States is now having a big diplomatic rush into Indonesia and all those countries, and they're getting new bases put in, they're putting in people, they're getting contracts written up, and this is all of a sudden is going on. Which started to focus me that this is not the pivot to China that Obama talked about is shifting into a real war type scenario. And it's not that, how do I say this? They want to fight China like they want to fight Russia. And I don't know really why, but that's what they want to do. They need to fight something. Yeah, but it looks like they're trying to pick fights with lots of countries. And so it's not, again, China starts to get more apparent here that it's we know they want to get Russia, but they also want to get China, even though that Kissinger went over to talk with Xi Jinping friends, but they're advancing the globalistic condition is what he's doing as friends. The United States is moving in to do battle, and the signs are starting to come up. I guess the open discussion is actually more again, the admission. If we're talking openly, that's either propaganda to get the Chinese to start putting things together for themselves, which they probably already are. In fact, I think they're building more ships right now than we ever can create. They do more ships in one shipyard than we do in our complete nation at this point. So there's a big shift that's going on for the material that would be going to war. So it's concerning. I don't know. I don't want to be a warmonger. I don't want to promote that. But the United States is looking for a fight, and they're going to find it. I mean, that's just the way it works. But what else is who else supports the United States in this is the same type of mentality that we see. We talk, it comes back up in the news all the time. Israel's apartheid versus South Africa's apartheid. There's interesting discussions, people. However I might think about them normally, some of these people, these Congress critters, they just don't have my sentiment at all. But sometimes, again, not baby with the bathwater, you don't want to throw them out. They got a good point. They got a good point. And I have to give credit to this one. Israel's apartheid versus South Africa's apartheid. The U.S. Congress is more unanimously supportive of Israel's apartheid than it was of South Africa's. And this is you have to kind of go back and do some of the study, and I can't say this is an untruth. On Wednesday, July 19th, the Asian American Sharon Zhang headlined, "Only 9 House reps vote against resolution denying Israel apartheid." You know, behind which yet, I've said it is. I'm in the position that it is. You've heard my position about the Palestine. You've heard my position about the people of there. You've heard my position about what is Semitism. And the Zionists are not Semites. And so I've pretty much put myself in the camp that I'm against the Zionist state. I've also pointed out how the Jewish people are being used by this political movement that started up in the late 1800s or so, a little bit before, a little that, where we, anyway, so that, I went by land law, by law of ownership and use to analyze who should have had the right there. And it comes clear to me that the people that are claiming a right there don't have the right to make the claim any more than even I would. And so there's not a definitive position that we would see the type of treatment that they're doing to people who had the land, have the land, and had the land for ancient time, and should have had a right without the incursion, that the people that have overthrown them are causing an apartheid no different that the United States now supports Israel's type of apartheid more than Africa's. In a fiery speech on the House floor Tuesday, Tlaib, the sole Palestinian member of Congress, rebuked lawmakers for reaffirming Congress's support of apartheid. Let's get the record straight here. The United Nations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Israel's own largest human rights organization, B'Tselem, all agree that Israel is an apartheid state. To assert otherwise, Mr. Speaker, in the face of this body of evidence, is an attempt to deny the reality and normalize violence of apartheid. And I think there's a very good point being made here. So whatever your thoughts are, I don't know. I just have to go with mine. I think that there's a time of an outing going on here. Again, she's just talking. She's trying to make a statement, but most of the United States government doesn't support her position. Even though when I look at it, I would have to be on supporting what she's saying here. I don't know if I support her politics. I don't think I do, but generally at this point on this story, this is absolutely right. The United States government is a warmongering state. It wants to establish apartheid wherever it actually goes. And so we see these Israel now beefing up with the new drills going on relative to the Iran question. I don't know why it's a question. They should leave people alone. And using that as an excuse to make war again. Now, she talked about, I guess I should not be important in a way, McCarthy, she talks about Mr. Speaker. Well, that guy, he just backed off of going after Biden for impeachment, which was what could be predictive. He's like a California Republican. He's a Democrat. I mean, come on. So the point is, he's talking to someone who really is not on the same page with her. And I think she's on the truth of this, that part. And we talked about their leader there, Netanyahu. They have gotten the judicial reform through. I guess people are not liking it. He's downplaying the point. Last week he had a little faint. And this apartheid state leader, they're getting even more vicious in that direction. I sometimes wonder, if this is not messages being sent, but Netanyahu, who said it was just dehydration, undergoes a heart surgery. If I go off a little bit of an aside, didn't that country that get 99.9% vaccination rates too? Actually, I want to go back a little bit. He is running that regime that's an apartheid state. It's understood to be. Go back to these people that they're not going to go back to them. Just remember, she made a list of designations. All those are groups of potentially questionable output. Remember, the nonprofit or the non-government organization World Law Foundation makes now a trophy that they hand to someone who's actually committing war. These types of non-government organizations are who we get our information from. So I'm not so sure about parts of this. But independent of all that, she's right. I guess I wanted to point that out. So it was Netanyahu who now has this heart attack thing going on. Lawmakers, she said on that, went on to quote Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's own words about his regime's hatred of Palestinians. Beat them up. Not once, but repeatedly. Beat them up. until it's unbearable, Netanyahu once said, as Taleb noted. She pointed out another time recently that Netanyahu said that Israel must crush Palestinians' hopes for sovereignty as well, when former Defense Minister Rabbi El-Ben-Dayan said in 2013 that Palestinians are beasts and not human. And remember his name now, Shlomo or something, his name, the guy, one of those ministers said, they don't even exist, these people, Palestinians. And then we hear Netanyahu has this heart surgery. He had a heart event. So the evil comes out and the evil is attacking him, whether or not that's a symbol, I don't know. It seems like it to me. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu underwent surgery overnight. He wants to have Palestinians beaten and beaten again. These are not nice people. The operation was carried out under sedation at the Sheba Medical Center in Tel Aviv and was conducted successfully without complications. Again, I just wondered, did he have a jab? What was this thing? He wasn't known for this, is another thing. So I want to kind of keep that little going on. But wondered how much of this is a feedback to what his attitude is toward people. So I don't know about Palestinian or Israelis even or whomever. We're people. Why do we have this venom for people? Where does this really come from? Then I'm just back to the point that we have this choice to make, I guess, in the world. And they've chosen to put their venom on certain people while they're attempting to steal the land from them. Netanyahu issued a brief statement overnight on Twitter saying that the week ago I was fitted with a monitoring device. That device beeped this evening and said I must have a pacemaker and that I must do this already tonight. So he did that. He was told, a machine told him that. Again, you notice who his God is there too. It had no sense. We've lost our sense as people about our own nature, about what was going on about that. But a machine tells him a beep goes on and he gets a heart pacemaker. And maybe I'm having a problem with that. How is someone as heartless as him, where did they fit this pacemaker? Let's hope something works out better in the world, because there's always symbols that go on. Pfizer says the most tornado damage in the North Carolina plant was a warehouse facility, not manufacturing line. So this wasn't an act of God that hit those supply lines that Netanyahu would have been given the heart problem. Pfizer's warehouse was not, the supply of the vaccines was not taken out. They have a lot of other chemicals that Pfizer makes. And it was taken out by a tornado. Interesting act of God. I thought that was pretty interesting. As U.S. creates permanent pandemic agency, the office will take over the duties of White House COVID-19 response team. As I told you, the endless disease. Remember, United States doesn't have purview over pandemics because they don't exist locally to the United States. And only the local officials have reserved powers over the United States government itself, over only outbreaks and epidemics. If you understand what I was telling you for all these years, you can see this is just the United States government setting up for biological threats is just going to be a license for them to issue and give biological threats at warp speed. I hope something I said today makes sense and comes together for you and gives you insight. Hopefully it gives you something to focus on to go do something to fix, whether that's to you or whether that's to help others. Like I said, to you, maybe to work in money and to help others, finding people who have needs that you can take your skills and apply to and help to them. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.